Okay. I will occasionally find myself on Okeechobee Boulevard heading east, turning north to go on the turnpike. Now, although I rarely go there, the following happens every time I do go there. And that is that I just miss the light to turn to go north on the turnpike. You with me? So I'm first in line, left turn lane, eastbound Okeechobee, north on the turnpike. There's nobody else on the road but me. I look in the rearview mirror, the road behind me is completely clear. Nobody. And I sit there, and I wait, and I wait, and I wait some more, because that light is the longest light in all of Palm Beach County. And I look behind me, and there's a little speck in the mirror in the distance. And that little speck is traffic that's coming. And so I sit there and I go, change. Change now before that traffic gets here. Change. And the light still does not change. You know where I'm coming from, right? I'm sitting there. I'm first in line. Who should be going first when that light changes green? Me. Because why? Because I've been there the longest and I've been there waiting 7, 8, 10 minutes. And yet the traffic keeps coming behind me and it keeps getting closer and closer and closer. And the light doesn't change. And what am I thinking? That traffic's going to get here. They don't care that I've been here. Right? Because they don't. They're only interested in themselves, are they not? And sure enough, they get closer and closer. And then what happens, just as they're rolling up on my bumper and they're filling in all the crevices around me, the light changes and they've got a full head of steam and off they go and I get left in their dust and I'm like fifth or sixth to get on the turnpike. What's the parable I'm talking about this morning? The vineyard, the workers in the vineyard. Some of them worked all day long. And it didn't make any difference that they were there first. Look in Matthew chapter 19. By the way, I really did go through that mental exercise one day when I was sitting there. It was so frustrating. And then I was going to get on the turnpike and it clicked in my head. Wait a minute, God talked to me about this. Look in Matthew chapter 19. The parable's in chapter 20. But I want us to think about and see what God is talking, or what Jesus is talking about, because he's talking to his disciples. Look in 19:23. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Assuredly I say to you that it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And again I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven." When his disciples heard it, they were greatly astonished, saying, "Who then can be saved?" But Jesus looked at them and said to them, "With men this is impossible, with God all things are possible." We know that to be true, do we not? What's Peter's response next to all of this? Then Peter answered and said to him, "See, we have left all and followed you. Therefore, what shall we have?" Peter has been sitting at that stoplight, first in line to get on the turnpike all this time. And he thinks he deserves something more. Well, what does Peter deserve? You know, what do we as Christians get through God's grace?
Everything we need.
All that we need, Tasha says. Everything, all of it. Well, is Peter's reaction, we know what Peter's reaction is and has been in other situations, and for that matter, some of the other disciples who would later become apostles. When did a full understanding of what they were doing come about? Not till the day of Pentecost. At some points and in some ways, They were just like the rest of the Jews when it came to an understanding of what their place was and what Jesus was really doing as being a spiritual kingdom rather than an earthly one. And Peter asked this question. And Jesus said to him, verse 30 is where I want to jump to. But many who are first will be last, and the last first. Now, back to the turnpike analogy, guess what? All of us paid the same price to get on it, did we not? I got to ride it just like everybody else got to ride it. Did any of us have preference? What about these workers in the vineyard? What about these guys that worked all day long? And what about these guys that only worked a part of the day? If you only worked a part of the day, but you had an agreement to do a certain thing, to receive a certain payment, what would you expect? Do I have a right? Do I have... If you were raised in the church, raise your hand. Half, I guess. So was I. I should have raised my hand. I didn't. Both of my parents were members of the church. I was baptized when I was 13 years old, May 13th, 1968. For the most of my life, well, I can say for all of my life, I've attended two congregations. I don't move around a lot. One in Texarkana, Texas, one here. Sometimes, do those of us who've been in the church for a long, long time kind of feel like we have a special place with God? The answer ought to be no. But, you know, what's human nature sometimes? To kind of think, well, you know, I've been doing this a long time. Maybe I deserve a little more. Maybe I'm a little more special than somebody else is. Is that what this parable teaches? And it absolutely is not. Who do I rejoice with on the day of judgment when all of my Christian brothers and sisters are there, regardless if they've been a Christian for one day or if they've been a Christian for 50 years? I rejoice with every single one of them. Let's look at Matthew chapter 20. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. Now when he agreed with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour, and he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right I will give you." So they went. And let's stop right there. What's the difference between the first group and the second group? All right, Jackie's answer to the question, which is where I want to go, is what the very first group... Well, it was a negotiation that involved a specific dollar amount. See it? One denarius. There is wording that implies that there was some type of negotiation. The New King James says, "Now when he had agreed," I think that... Does somebody have ESV handy with them? Tina, what does ESV say? After what? The ESV says, after agreeing with the laborers, the implication being that there was some type of negotiation that took place. If you were standing in the ready-to-work line on any given morning waiting for somebody to come by and hire you for the day, given our present day kind of mindset about things, what is one of the first things that you would probably talk about when somebody came up to offer you employment? How much? Is there a problem asking how much? There was some type of negotiation. Those guys said something. The landowner said something. There was a dollar amount agreed to. It turned out to be a denarius. About 20 cents, roughly. It was a day's labor, a day's wage. But when he went out to the third hour to get the second group, what was the discussion? Why are you not working? Because there were some people that were standing around. You want to go to work? I will give you what's right. And what did those people do? Went to work. Now, you tell me, what is your mindset if you were there before 6, because we're talking about in round numbers, the Jewish day starting at 6 a.m., depending on the time of the year, whether there's light or not light, that sort of thing. But let's just put it in terms we can kind of understand. You're there getting somebody to work, and it's about 5:30 in the morning. You're making a negotiation. You're getting the workers ready to go, and you're going into the vineyard to start work at 6 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, you're still there. You haven't found a job. You haven't worked. And so the landowner comes up and says, why are you guys here? Well, what's their response to it? It's on down there. I'm sorry, it's not the 9 o'clock group, but one of the groups says, well, nobody has come to say anything to us. You go if you want to work, don't you? What is less important at 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and 5 o'clock than it was at 5:30 in the morning? Because at some point, as a worker, you're recognizing, hey, the time's drawing near, and I don't have any money in my pocket to show for this. I need to just go, right? Well, from the landowner's perspective, what's different at 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and 5 o'clock? The amount of work left to be done, right? So you go out at 5 o'clock in the morning to get workers ready for the 6 a.m. shift, and you've got X number of bushels of grapes to pick, or whatever, however you pick grapes, and you estimate you need X number of people to do that. You realize at 9 o'clock you don't have enough people to get the work done in the course of one day, and you hire some more. You realize at 12, and so on and so forth. So there are specific issues on both sides, both the landowner and the workers, as to why it's important to get more people, right? And why it's important to get more, or why it's important to accept work, even if you don't know exactly what the wage is going to be. What happens at the end of the day? Every day is payday. Have you ever had a job where you got paid every day instead of once a week? Well, Gary's holding his hand up, but he did it like this. Like, were you getting zero per day, Gary? And you paid him that night. If they wilted under the sun, drag them out from the field.
At bear blades, you get paid every day. If you pick beans or pull corn.
Ralph says that in Bell Glades, you get paid every day if you're picking beans or corn or whatever the case might be. You do a day's work, you get a day's pay. Now, in this particular parable, what does the day have reference to? What is payday for a Christian? Judgment Day, when Jesus comes back and we all stand before God to receive our compensation, such that it is, I guess. So we've got something that we're looking to that comes about because of the action we took or did not take during the course of the day. Chapter verse 6. I'm sorry, verse 4. I'm still in 20. I said chapter, I meant verse. I'm not with it for a minute or two, I guess. Starting with verse 5. And again he went out about the sixth hour, and the ninth hour he did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out, and he found some others standing idle, and he said to them, why have you been standing here idle all day. And they said to him, because no one has hired us. He said to them, you also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right, you will receive. What kind of trust do we have when it comes to our employer? In the course of everyday business.
He's out for himself.
Pardon?
He's out for himself to make money.
A lot of times that's what we think, isn't it? You know, we're not so sure that our employer is going to do the right thing. How much faith did it take for these third hour, sixth hour, ninth hour, 11th hour people to accept that offer? If you'll go work, I'll do the right thing. How much faith does that take? Jackie, what'd you say?
I said they're just glad to make some money. They've been sitting here adding all their needed money.
So it didn't take a lot of faith, you think?
For them to sit there all day?
No, for them to believe that the employer was going to do the right thing.
Yeah, but well,
well, all right, but we don't know that at this point, do we? And they didn't know that. The employer says, I'm going to do the right thing. Do we trust the employer?
No, we don't.
No, I think most of the time we don't in a secular setting. Mike?
Like I would say.
Mike says, with an employer in a secular setting, we don't know what the circumstances are, and he might be out of business, and we really aren't guaranteed anything. And I guess, legally speaking, in Florida, that's even more true because Florida is an at-will state when it comes to employment. Your employer can walk in any day and just say you're gone and not have to give you a reason. All right, Mike is taking an anti-employer position. and I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with that for purposes of this discussion. Because where are we trying to go with this? Typically, we don't trust the employer, do we? Y'all, that's what you're telling me. And I guarantee you when this... Well, I won't say I guarantee you because that's putting me somewhere where I shouldn't. I will bet you... No, I can't say that either because I can't gamble. It would not surprise me to see that most of the people in here take sides with the all-day laborers as being treated unfairly. Because that's the mindset of our society today, is it not? And every time you see a new series come on television or a new mystery movie, a blockbuster on the big screen, we're seeing this theme more and more and more. And I think it's desensitizing all of us, if I can editorialize for just a second. It's desensitizing us to what our responsibility as a Christian is in many, many cases. Because Romans 13 is clear about the need for government and what it's there for. You know, and our job as a Christian, our responsibility as a Christian is to be subject to it, which then includes being subject to those that take care of us on a day-to-day basis, i.e. our employers. And if our employers don't do us right, it's on them, not us. Because what's our responsibility as a Christian? To go work. Okay? Tina? Well, those... Tina's example is the real life example that she went through where she worked for a period of time at X number of dollars, only to find out that someone who had worked less time than she was making more money than she. And the advice of her father when she asked what to do, how do I approach this? And her father's advice was, you don't approach your employer about this because you made an agreement. And that's what this parable is all about. When it comes to payday, are we going to be paid? Did everyone get paid?
Yes.
They did. Gene, do you have... Gene worked for a long period of time. And Gene got cheated. Have we all been there at one point? Okay, Mary hasn't. Mary hasn't. I need to grab this and rein it back in right now. But you're getting passionate. Ralph's got the same experience. Yeah, we better not go there, Ralph. Listen, I'm not saying we can't go to him, but ultimately, here's the point of the parable. Okay? Julie. Could everyone hear Julie's comments? Because the Holy Spirit put words in Julie's mouth to get this class back on track. Right now, in such a way that you can't ignore that what Julie's talking about is this ultimate lesson that we're learning here of pride and humility and the Christian's responsibility to do whatever it takes, period. Because our reward is not like the end of the day getting the wage paid for that day's work. Our reward comes at a bigger pay date, years and years and years and years and so on and forth, maybe down the road. Or it could be today. We don't know the answer to any of that. Mike? The example of the thief on the cross, Mike indicates we don't know his history, but we know that based on the words of Jesus at that particular time, he had the same reward. Dirk? All right. Dirk's comment is if we're waiting to get paid based on what it is we deserve, we don't deserve anything. Now, if you're talking about what the main theme of this parable is, based on what Dirk just said, tell me what the theme of this parable is. God's grace overcomes all. Yes? What happens regardless of how much we work or how little we work or whatever the case might be? Because when it comes down to payday, can we work our way into heaven? I'm thinking about Paul. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And I know there were a couple more hands up, and I'll get to you in just a second. But let's look here at something. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves amongst themselves are not wise. What difference does it make how much someone else worked or didn't work? What difference does it make what that other person did or did not do when it comes to our salvation? Who's responsible for whom? Let's continue with Paul. You're exactly right, Tasha. Let's continue and stay in 2 Corinthians and go to chapter 12. Look in verse 7. Unless I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a message of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times, that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, and my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities than the power of Christ may rest upon me. If anybody had a reason to complain about something, Paul thinks it was him. And yet, how did Paul approach that? He prayed for it. There was no response directly as to what it was, that the solution that he wanted. And it's still there. And he just got through telling us a couple of chapters earlier. You can't compare me and the next guy. You can't look at what the next guy's issues are and make comparisons relative to yourself. Jim's point is that sometimes we overlook the point that they were all asked to work and they all did work. And we're taking exception with that first group because they seem to have a little attitude about things. And they show it a little bit later because what happens when it comes to payday? They complained. But yet, what did they do? And in the parable, what did they receive? Did they receive their wages? And they did. And so we look at that group that went out there early in the morning and apparently negotiated for their wage rate. And then in the landowner's wisdom, he reverses the pay order and has those who come in last to be paid first so that those who were there the longest can see what the situation is and what happens. Another lesson is taught. Those who came in last shall be first. And what's the point of all that? Humility that Julie brought up earlier. Service that Jim talks about. Humbling yourself in the sight of the Master. Did the people who were there all day have any legitimate reason to complain? And they absolutely did not, because what was the only group of the entire day that actually negotiated for a dollar amount? And they got paid. And then what was every other group that came in promised? We will do what is right for you. Now in that scenario, who's the only one that you would expect is going to get upset? That first group. And who is the group that for the most part our attitude today is we feel sorry for? When in fact that very first group, there's absolutely nothing that we should feel sorry about them for. And especially not when we put it in context of eternity and the scriptural aspect of what we're looking at, rather than just working in the vineyard physically picking grapes off the vine. I want to go to heaven, do you? And I want to see everyone here around me there too. I want to see all my family there. I want to see all my kids there. You know, and all these things. And yet we all don't have the same level of service from a seniority standpoint, do we?
Well, the first group had a lot more security and they worked and they had peace of mind.
You know, that's
the second group, maybe was,
that's a good point. That's a good point, and I hadn't discussed that, and to tell you the truth, I really didn't think about it, but it's a very good point, because that first group had something the others did not. And the point is, it was the security that they had knowing that they had a paycheck of X number of dollars. And what did everybody else have? Faith? Yeah. It's a good point. Stephanie. I'm sorry, say that again.
The first group wasted their work time by comparing the wages each time a new set of workers came in.
All right. The first group was wasting time as they were sitting there worrying about what the next group was getting or not getting versus what they were getting. Well, we should have docked their pay for that, shouldn't we? Yes, we should have. Mickey.
The other aspect of this is we are God's workers in His vineyard, and He needs workers all the way up to the end.
Mickey's point is we are all workers in God's vineyard, and the work never ends. There will always be work to do. Joe Quigley was, and I'm looking for Bonnie because I don't want to embarrass Bonnie. This is a good story. Is she in a different class? All right. Because I didn't tell her ahead of time I was going to mention this. Joe Quigley was in his 80s when he was baptized. Dan, help me. Is that accurate? That is, or was he around 90? Joe Quigley, 90 years old when he was baptized, roughly, give or take? 87. Joe Quigley was 87 years old when he was baptized. And I remember teaching a class one Sunday morning that Joe was in. And Joe was so energetic in the class, and he was answering questions, and he was getting the point. You know, and I just, for some reason, it just hit me that particular day when I was teaching that class that there was Joe. One. And Joe was approximately the same age older than me, than I had been a Christian longer than he had. You follow my math? Okay, Joe, at whatever age he was 35 years older than me and had only been a Christian for a year or so, and I had been a Christian 35 years longer than Joe. And where are Joe and I both going? Where are we both going to be? I mean, do I want to see Joe standing next to me and have my arm around him? If I can have ill will towards that, I'm not a Christian. I mean, that's just how is there any way I could justify being prideful about the fact that I was raised in the church and I've been a Christian all my life? There is not. And yet sometimes we are that way because sometimes we don't go out searching those publicans and those sinners and all those others in order to bring them in. And man, if that's our attitude, that's wrong. That's just all you can say about it. What this parable is talking about, when we look at all of these different settings or types of workers and the scenarios for each one of them, that ultimately, where are we all trying to go? You know, we're trying to get that vineyard taken care of. Questions or comments? Tina? All right, I'm going to cut you off because I want to try to paraphrase that because that was an excellent comment. Tina's comment is this, that she looks at those who came into the church later in life and weren't raised in it as heroes of hers because of how they had to change and what they had to do, and in many ways her faith was simply handed to her. That's a pretty powerful picture. Those of us raised in the church, we all went through a phase in our life where we had to really discover what our faith was. At some point, we had to figure out where our faith was. And for some of us, easier than others. But those who came later became Christians later in life, and perhaps much different life story behind that. Yeah, we have absolutely no reason, no at all, as Christians, in any circumstance, to be prideful or arrogant. Or other comments or questions? Stephanie. Stephanie, then Jim. And I don't know how much time you got left, but you know.
If you are raised in the church.
How lucky we are to have found, right. Yeah, absolutely. To be.
The later workers in the new also have more energy when they come in.
And that's another lesson.
The 12-hour workers, they're tired. The 1-hour workers may have done 2 or 3 hours.
That's another lesson for us, isn't it? I mean, we've got to maintain our energy as Christians. Jim?
Well,
Absolutely. Okay. Jim's point is faith without works is dead. And I apologize if I missed that to begin with. All right? Thank you.